everybody. Welcome to Everything is Okay podcast. Maybe asking yourself, what is the Everything is Okay podcast? We are a group of people from the small town of Claremore, Oklahoma. We grew up in some form of conservative Christianity, most of us growing up in the Southern Baptist Convention. Since that time, we have all went through some form of deconstruction and or some heavy revision to our faith. And now we are trying to go through life while having some form of faith and while asking questions. It's been kind of an interesting year this year for the podcast. We had a lot of really awesome plans that we had come up with at the beginning of the year. We reached out to a lot of people to be our guests at the beginning of the year, especially artists that we knew or authors that we knew that were going to be coming out with new books and things like that. And we did get a couple scheduled, and they're coming up soon. But we've also had a bit of a dry spell this year on having guests return messages back to us. We've had a couple things fall through. It's been kind of an interesting year. But I guess that kind of models a bit how the year has been going for the country. It's been kind of a strange year. I know in the last episode we talked about the Chinese spy balloon that drifted over the entire country until it got past the country, then they shot it down. Since that time, they've shot down two more unidentified objects. It's just been kind of strange. We're ramping up all the rhetoric that you hear because the elections are coming up. So now you're going to hear a lot of candidates putting their hat in the ring. It looks like Trump is going to be back in the race, so you know that's going to be interesting. I think DeSantis is in the race on the right. There's some other people that have entered the ring, Nikki Haley, some other people. It's going to be really interesting to see what the Democrats do. If Biden's going to run again, it looks like he is, but it may not have support. Who knows? So it's just going to be one of those crazy years. And there is a lot of things going on. One thing that I do want to mention, and I'm sorry to do this so early in the podcast. I'm not trying to bring everybody down, but I did just read this yesterday, and it's been on my mind all day. If you followed us last year, you probably heard about halfway through the year, maybe a little bit earlier than that, me talk about my neighbor or my neighbors and their little boy who had been diagnosed with a brain tumor, and it was a death sentence, basically, this particular brain tumor. And as of yesterday, the family posted that it looks like they are in the final stages of getting to be with him. Of course, I read this. I'm actually getting emotional now just even thinking about it. Of course, I read this and I was just torn up. Because I've grown to absolutely adore this family. And I didn't really know what to do. I didn't know if I should reach out to them. If that's too much. I'm sure they have a lot of people reach out to them. And we do talk from time to time. Just some small talk and catching up with everybody. But I did make a post today that I just want to kind of relay again today during this recording, because it's the thing that I remember the most, and it's the thing that I'm always going to remember about. The little boy's name is Hiram. So if you hear me say the name Hiram, that's the boy I'm talking about. But the funny thing is at the house that Megan and I used to live at, we had had probably two or three families move into the house beside us in the 10 years that we lived there. And everyone that moved in was always nice. Some we knew better than others. one or two of the families were pretty quiet. We never really saw them, never really came out of their house. If they did, it was kind of one of those like friendly waves, and that's about it. And then the Maces moved in. We obviously didn't know anything about them. The only thing we knew about them is that they were moving in from Utah and that they hadn't had a chance to see the house in person. They bought the house based on pictures, which I just thought was just amazing that they had that much faith that they would buy a house on pictures, but they loved the house and they wanted to move in. So here they came and they moved into our little street on Chesterton Place, which we loved our street and we still love everyone on that street. And we still keep in contact with everyone on that street. But here they come. And this particular day, I was in the backyard. I think it was around lunchtime, hitting golf balls. I do that sometimes if I'm stressed. I like to play golf. I was trying to get better. I bought a little mat and a little net, and I'd go out in the back and I'd hit 10, 15 golf balls or maybe 20 during lunch, work on something, and then I'd go back in and continue to work. Well, this particular day, this little boy, Hiram, pops up in the backyard of our neighbor's house because they're moving in. They've got the moving trucks out in the front. I knew that, but here comes this little boy, and he comes up to me with zero fear, with all the kindness in the world and all the just awesome naivety of children. And you know what I'm talking about, just that zero fear in the world. He comes up to me, he says hi, he says my name is Hiram. I said, hi Hiram, my name's Brad. And almost immediately, he asked to come into the backyard with me if he could come back here. Now keep in mind, I hadn't even met his parents yet. I hadn't seen them yet. So I think my response was something to the effect of, maybe I should meet your parents first. Maybe we should ask permission from them before, you know, I let a little boy into my backyard, having just met him. But that's how we met. And over the course of the next couple of weeks, it was obvious once we met the whole family, their three children, Michael and Erica, it was obvious they were going to be some very good friends of ours. They were extremely kind. They are extremely kind. They are incredibly gracious. They were just amazing people. And I mean, there's so many things that we did with them as far as neighbor things. When Crosby fell and busted her head open when I was not there, they were the ones, because they had kids that helped Megan get through that. It was the very first, like, I'm not going to call it trauma because it's a little bit dramatized, but it was scary. It was the first, she was bleeding a lot. You know, if you get anything on your head, bust your head open, almost to the verge of needing stitches, it bleeds a lot. And it's scary, especially when your child is maybe 1 year old, maybe a little bit more than that. And they help talk her through it. We would have dinners. We would have times where we would go over to their house. They would come over to our house to play. They were just great. We even played that game Slam Ball, where it was Megan and I versus Michael and Erica, and they whooped us, and they whooped us pretty good, and they're very competitive, and I can't wait to play that game again with them. But we would just became good friends. And then came the diagnosis, and what was crazy about that is that Megan, Crosby, and I had literally went over to their house on a Friday night just to have a play date. I think we may have had dinner. Just one of those times where we got together. And everything was normal. All the kids were playing. They were running around, jumping off of a beanbag, jumping onto a bean, this giant beanbag that they had. Hiram was a normal 5-year-old boy, full of energy, very sweet, very, very rough as boys are, you know. And everything was great. And I think it was the next Sunday, maybe the next Monday, you know, we found out that he was a little bit under the weather. And, you know, we're coming off of COVID. Never really know what stuff is. He was, you know, he had headaches and things. And, you know, I think we all just kind of, you know, thought it was just a normal illness. And then it didn't go away. And it got worse. Long story short, he got diagnosed. And then we were able to be there with them. Now, we didn't get to go to treatments. We didn't get to go to all these things. But we were able to be there with the family because they were right next door. And we were able to just love on them and be around them. And then they got accepted to a trial that was going to take them to California. And at that time, we thought they were completely moving away forever. And it was a really sad time. But we just got a chance to experience kind of that. We don't know what's going to happen now. Let's cherish every moment type situation with them for a couple months. And I say all that to say that I never expected to have neighbors touch me like they did. I think about them every day. I don't bother them every day or anything, but I would do anything for them. And I love this situation that I have with them because on paper, we don't have a ton in common. We grew up very much differently. Different religions, if you will. Some different core beliefs. Grew up in different states. But yet we're very similar as well. And none of that ever mattered because of the quality of people that they were and how much we cared for them. And we still care for them. And they still are those people. Now, why am I saying all this? I've been talking for 13 minutes about this little boy. It's because it's close to the end of his life, and I can't get him out of my mind. I can't stop thinking about him and his graciousness as he was getting sicker. How kind he was to our little girl the last time we got to see him right before they left. I just can't stop thinking about him. But here's the thing that I find really interesting about life in general. I made that post today basically saying a shorter version of what I just said. How much I cared about the family, how much I cared about him, how much I'm going to miss him, et cetera, et cetera. And some nice people said very nice comments about the post, about Hiram, and things like that. But what I find interesting about it is the humanity that comes out of those moments. And people don't have any focus on differences, on, you know, what happened that day. None of that. They focus on the humanity of what's going on at that particular moment. And they focus on what is the right thing to say, what is the right thing to do. Most people. I'm not going to say everyone. I know that there are people who like to stir stuff up, especially on social media. But in situations that I've been in, the humanity of people comes out a lot. I live in Oklahoma. We have a lot of tornadoes. We've had some natural disasters. We had the Oklahoma City bombing that I remember when I was a kid. And the thing that always gets talked about is the humanity that comes out of it. The bombing was horrible. But people came together at that moment, lined up at blood institutes to give, donate blood, did anything they could, donated money, all these things. Same thing when a tornado comes through and wipes out a town, people are there the next day with chainsaws, pulling limbs off of things, getting people back on their feet. It's incredible. And I got to see that today because of this little boy. And in a lot of ways, that's his legacy. And I'm just really fortunate to have gotten to know the Mace family and to still get to be call them a friend and to get to know Hiram and their two other children, which we adore as well, Emily and Caleb. We love them all. And they're very much in our thoughts. They're very much in our prayers when we do. And it's a crazy situation. But I want to move on to a couple other topics that have been on my mind as well. This is kind of a hard transition. I can hear James yelling at me now because it's a hard transition. Probably should have some transition music or something like that. But there's a topic that keeps coming up in just circles that I've been around, newscasts I see, especially here in Oklahoma. Oklahoma just made the news today because they passed some laws about banning books in schools. And specifically, I'm actually looking at the OklahomaSenate.gov website. And there was a senator out of Norman that filed two bills today that he claims are addressing issues of growing concern for Oklahoma parents. And that is the indoctrination of their children in schools, classrooms, and on college campuses. So I mentioned there are two bills. The first bill dealt with sexually graphic books in public schools, public charter schools, and school libraries. And the second tackles diversity course requirements in college and universities. So to give this senator, which is Rob Standridge, a fair shot, quote him directly. Here was his quote about these two bills, and then I'll tell you what the bills are, and then I'll get into why I wanted to talk about this topic, because there's a word that keeps popping up that I hear all the time right now, and it's going to be more and more as the elections go on. You're going to hear this word, and it got me thinking of something from my past. But here's the quote from Senator Rob Standridge of Norman. He says, "We are blessed in America that every citizen has access to free public education and then has the freedom to pursue a higher education if they choose. The purpose of our common education system is to teach students about math, history, science, and other core areas of learning, all of which are further expanded on in college as students pursue their fields of interest. Our education system is not the place to teach moral lessons that should instead be left up to parents and families. Unfortunately, however, more and more schools are trying to indoctrinate students by exposing them to gender, sexual, and racial identity curriculums and courses. My bills will ensure these types of lessons stay at home and out of the classroom." So, as you may imagine, he is a Republican senator out of Norman. And here is the actual bills to give them a little bit more context as to what they actually say and are about. And then I'll get into my point for why I'm even talking about this. So the first bill is Bill 1142, and this prohibits public schools, public charter schools, and public school libraries from having or promoting books that address the study of sex, sexual preferences, sexual activity, sexual perversion, sex-based classifications, sexual identity, gender identity, or books that contain content of a sexual nature that a reasonable parent or legal guardian would want to know about or approve before their children was exposed to it. So I don't know if you have, I don't know what state you live in or if you live in a different country, but around here, especially in the southern states, especially in states that are more red in nature, which means it's more highly populated by the Republican Party. This is something that has been coming up a lot lately, as far as, you know, books about, especially about sexual education. You know, it's something you've heard for a long time where parents are concerned about the sexual education that they're getting in schools. You know, some schools would pass out condoms. Some schools would have some pretty explicit sexual education classes that they would give to their students. So this isn't a surprising bill to me, honestly, especially in the state that I live in, because they talk about stuff like this all the time. You know, I don't know if this will pass, but it doesn't surprise me that this at least was brought up and got through committee and is going to a vote. I don't think this has went to the House yet, but that's the first bill. The second bill, what it says, is Senate Bill 1141, and it prohibits institutions within the Oklahoma state system of higher education, which includes the major state colleges, Oklahoma State, from requiring students to enroll in a course, and there's an important word there, requiring, from requiring students to enroll in a course that is not a core requirement of their chosen curriculum addressing any form of gender, sexual, or racial diversity, equality, or inclusion curriculum, also known, you hear it all the time with critical race theory, that's what they're going after here, beginning in this academic year. Students could not be financially penalized for choosing not to enroll in these courses. I didn't know that was a thing. And it prohibits institutions from including or making part of a course that is a core requirement for a degree program certain concepts related to gender, sexual, or racial diversity, equality, or inclusion. So essentially, they're going after critical race theory here. And even though that's not a surprise with the state that I live in, because you hear that kind of talk all the time too, it is kind of interesting to see that written down and that the Senate is actually pushing it through. Again, not surprising. You know, Oklahoma was one of the first states to pass the trigger laws when Roe versus Wade was struck down. So something like this isn't too surprising. So why am I talking about this? If you're not from Oklahoma, you may or may not care about this, but what is my point? Why am I even bringing this up? There's a word that has been used a ton in all kinds of different political talk. You hear it a lot at churches nowadays, and that is the word indoctrination. Specifically, when you hear it coming from the right or from churches typically that tend to be more conservative, you'll hear it, the indoctrination of the radical left. They always like to throw in the word radical because apparently it's too crazy and, you know, whatever, to include people in your society. But that word indoctrination has been used a ton. And in the last week, I probably have heard it 20, 25 times in different situations of people talking, whether it be on the news, on the radio, in general conversations that I've been around. So it got me curious what the word indoctrination actually means. And I actually wrote it down. So the definition of indoctrination is the process of teaching a person or group to accept a set of beliefs uncritically. And because I'm a little bit more simple-minded than that, you know, I'd start to wonder what the word uncritically, what they mean by that. I'm a 6 on the Enneagram, so words matter to me. So in simple terms, indoctrination is to teach someone to fully accept the ideas, opinions, and beliefs of a particular group and to not consider the other ideas, opinions, or beliefs of the other group or of other groups. So that's what indoctrination means. And the reason why this kept popping up in my head, the reason why I've been thinking about it quite a bit lately, is because of the fact that I grew up in a core set of beliefs that I was in from the time I was probably a week old until, well, probably even now, I grew up in the Southern Baptist Convention. I grew up in church, basically. I grew up in Christianity. All I've ever been around has been Christian ideals, the Bible, teachings of Jesus, teachings about the disciples, Old Testament teachings, small groups, terminology of doing life together, being in circles where you learn from each other, iron sharpens iron, all those type of things. Stay away from things of the world. Live a different way. Basically, I have been indoctrinated my entire life. And why do I say that? Because you hear this all the time when you're in Christian circles and you hear, don't let your mind be persuaded by other beliefs. Those are false teachings. Don't listen to those. Only listen to this bubble. Keep yourself in a smaller bubble. Be of the world, but not in the world. You know, I grew up in a time when the Southern Baptist Convention was boycotting Disney. And I believe at the time, they boycotted Disney because they had a gay pride parade. Which, by the way, side note, Oklahoma also passed some laws today. One of which, they are trying to ban pride parades. Because apparently that's an important thing that we need to establish in our lexicon of bills. We need to make sure that we don't have pride parades. Apparently that's important. And they passed another bill today that was just ridiculous, but I can't remember it. So I'm not going to waste your time because I'm recording. But anyway, I grew up in a time when they banned Disney because they had a pride parade. I grew up in a time when there was a major push to burn your secular CDs because they are destroying your mind. Okay? They didn't want you listening to the Beatles because it wasn't a worship song. It wasn't explicitly talking about Jesus and or God and or Christian ideals. So you needed to burn that CD. Which in some ways, ironically, feels like blasphemy. But that's neither here nor there. It was a full indoctrination, and it still is. It still is. If you're still in that circle, it is still the same indoctrination. It is the same definition of what I just read. But I also grew up in a religion that talked about how you weren't supposed to have fear. You're supposed to trust in God. You're supposed to love on people and love God, right? Those were like the core things as well. At least I thought it was. But apparently it's not. It feels like lately the conservative side, which tends to be on the religious side, is full of fear. Full of fear that kids will just get crazy messed up. You hear the phrase all the time, well, you know, when they took prayer out of schools, it just went to hell, right? First of all, prayer was never taken out of schools. Corporate prayer was taken out of schools, meaning they couldn't force somebody who wasn't a Christian to have to sit through a Christian prayer in a public school. They took that out. But I held Bible studies at the school. We prayed. I was a part of See You at the Pole when I was in school. We prayed. No one said a word to you. They never took prayer out of schools. Okay? But there's a fear. They don't want to look at the root cause of some things, so they blame it on actions that of people that wasn't them. And you're seeing that now with these books. You know, sexually explicit books, sexually explicit classes. Okay? Basically, they're abstinence-onlying everything. Here's the problem. If you look at just sexual activity, teen pregnancy, the towns with the highest teen pregnancy rates most often are abstinence-only towns. I leave that pause there on purpose because it's just a fact. You can look it up. And not to mention, I also want to point out that of all the books I've ever read, the book with the most violence, the most sexual talk, the most sexual stories, sexual activity, all of those things, was the Bible. The Bible. And yet, we're willing to teach that to school, like to children, have children's Bibles where they talk about violence especially. Maybe not the sexual stuff, but for kids' Bibles, but definitely violence. I just read, you know, I kind of conveniently skip over the part of David killing Goliath to my two-year-old. And we more talk about how tall Goliath is and how short David is and his slingshot and look at him throw a rock. Like, you know, I'm guessing they don't want to take that book out of schools. It's just kind of a bummer to me that we're still in the day and age of fear. We still don't. If you're, let me say it this way, and I'm not trying to ruffle feathers. I get the importance to people of their religion. It's becoming a little bit less important to me, but actually, it's becoming a lot less important to me. In some ways, it feels silly to me sometimes. Just to me. But I get why people are in those circles. But those circles are ran by fear. And I don't know. That just doesn't seem healthy to me. And I'll give you another example, and this has been going on too in the last couple weeks. But this, some are calling a revival, some are calling it a movement of God, some are calling it just a get together at Asbury College. It's pretty cool. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, there's been, I think it went on at least 7 days. It just recently ended, but basically, they had a chapel service that never ended for days. They constantly had worship music going. I saw a video of supposedly they cast out a demon out of a lady. A lot of prayers. People would travel there from out of town to be a part of it. Um, I don't know much about it as far as what all went on there, but it looked pretty cool. A lot of people felt like God was moving. A lot of people felt like it was a revival. All that stuff, right? But here's what I also saw. I saw other Christians, which I really want to put quotations around, tearing it down for various reasons. Not saying it can't be a revival because of all kinds of these reasons. The most ridiculous one being a Baptist pastor that had to speak up out of his hotel room. He was clearly in a hotel room. Had to speak up. He just could not say something about it. And tear it down, basically. And his reasoning? First and foremost, it wasn't a Baptist college. So it couldn't be a revival. It's not being done correctly because it's not at a Baptist college. That was his first point and most important. Second, there were women, people of color, people in the LGBTQ community leading it. So there's no way God's moving there. It's just an emotional scene. People are getting caught up in the emotions. And I've seen many tweets like that. I've seen a lot of people upset that people are traveling to this place for various reasons. Some people are upset that they're traveling there because they think it's a futile exercise. Some people are upset because they feel like it goes against God being everywhere or whatever, even though they're not doing bupkis at their church. So, you know, apparently they're mad at people deciding to travel, but whatever. My point is, I've never seen a group of people cut down more of their own kind than Christians. It's so maddening. It's so, like, tiring. Like, oh my goodness, people. How about you just go, that's really cool. I hear there's some cool things going on over there. Maybe pray for them. Maybe start your own. If you think you can do it better, start your own. But it just bugs me. It's so tiring to listen to everybody just have to prove they're right or have to prove that someone else is wrong more so. I just wish that we as a country, we as just people, could just talk about the good. Could just talk about the good. And I think that's why I can't get Hiram off my mind. And I promise I won't go into a long diatribe again about this, but the boy stands for good. That family, the Mace family, stands for good. They're good people who are supportive of this podcast, who are supportive of this podcast, who not only listened, but engaged with it, would talk to me about it. And I know that we don't have the same beliefs in certain areas, but that didn't matter because they cared. They were being good to me and being a friend to me. And that's why I can't get them off my mind. Why I care so deeply about them. And why we can't wait to see them, even though we know seeing them is under horrible circumstances. But that's the episode. And I'm sorry if I was a bit of a bummer. There's just been some things in my mind that I've wanted to talk about. Some things I've been kind of wrestling with in my head. I've been having a hard time with with religion in general these days. I've been having a hard time with a lot of that because I don't see a lot of good. I see a lot of non-good things wrapped in good language. What I mean by good language is it's always flowery language. It's about your heart. We're reaching out to the people's heart. But when you really pay attention to what they're saying, it's not good at all. It's self-serving. It's power hungry. And I wish we could get to a time where we were just more about the good. About fellowship with people and loving on people, being there for people when they need it and caring about them when they don't need it and when they do. But if you're still with me, and I hope you are, I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. I want to thank you for being a part of our little community that we created. Gosh, going on 7, 8 years now. We're in season 8 of this. Who'd have thought that when we started this? We would love for you to engage with us. We'd love for you to give us your opinions. We would love for you to give us ideas for podcast episodes. If you know of an author that's putting out a book, if you know of an artist that's putting out an album that you think we should talk to, if you know of a film coming out that you think we would love to talk to the director, we'd love to hear about that. If you have an idea for a podcast as far as a topic that you think we should talk about, or situations that's happening that you think we ought to react to, we'd love to hear that. You can find us everywhere. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Our website is everythingsokay.net. We have a blog that we have really haven't written on lately. I'd like to get back into writing. There's some things that kind of came into my mind. But we have a blog there. We have a way for you to contact us. There's some old pictures of us if you're interested in what we look like as kids, just as babies. But yeah. We also do have a Patreon. As you can tell, you've just been listening to me talk. We haven't been interrupted by any kind of advertisement. But we do have a Patreon if you would like to support us. I believe the lowest tier is $5 a month. And what that does is it literally is for equipment. When we do our little get-together, because we're in different states, we do a get-together once a year to kind of go over some episode ideas. It helps us pay for gas. That's literally what it's for. We don't make a lot of money doing it. And we literally use it for operation expenses. So if you'd like to support us, it would be an honor if you do so. But with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and end this episode. My name is Brad Stair. And on behalf of David Meggs, James Eisenhower, Matt O'Mealy, and Malia Mullins, everything is okay, people. Thank you.
the fire.